Welcome to the Brisbane Property Podcast with your hosts Melinda and Scott Jennison from Streamline Property Buyers, your local Brisbane property specialists.
Hi everyone and welcome to another episode of the Brisbane Property Podcast. My name is Scott Jennison, the Acquisitions Manager here at Streamline Property Buyers. Always exciting to have a guest, and most people that hear this guest on our podcast will probably relate to cricket as opposed to sort of property. So really looking forward to a chat today with Ben Cutting. Welcome, Ben.
Thanks for having me. I've been a long time listener, so it's great to see all the behind the scenes and meet the team out the back here as well.
We ran into Ben at an auction. I think it was, we actually looked at one of your properties, which I'll touch on a little bit later. And we ran into you at an auction one day in Ascot. And that's obviously when we had a bit of a chat and the idea came through our head to bring you on the podcast to tell a bit of the story about not just your cricketing, but also your business side of things.
I think that one of the things that excites me, Ben, about having you as a guest on the podcast today, not only are you an exceptional cricket player, and Scott can go into that because cricket's not my area of expertise, as I was pointing out before we went on air, but you've also really carved out a career in property, you know, alongside a professional cricket career. And I think that's, you know, really something to be applauded in the current day and age, because we see so many sports people who really focus on the sport that they're very elite in, and yet they don't think beyond their sporting career. So today's episode is really about sharing that information with our audience. Ben's obviously a Brisbane boy, born and bred. So we're really going to unpack how a professional sports person can also carve out a career in property and really benefit to set up their future.
So Ben, Brisbane born and bred. Now I don't know if I've got all the stats in the rink, but you represented Australia in one day internationals, T20 matches. You played in the IPL, Indian Premier League. And you've recently, I don't know whether I should be touching on this one too much, but I know you've recently been overseas and you finished up the tour in Bangladesh with a back injury as well.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, so I've been playing cricket professionally now for, I'm 37, so 18, 19 years just about, through the Queensland system. And then I sort of moved more into the freelance side of things with, you know, evolution of 2020 cricket around the world. And that's where, you know, it takes me to places like India, Pakistan, America and Canada, where a lot of those tournaments are. But yeah, the most recent one was in Bangladesh, which very disappointing, unfortunately. Three games in, I destroyed a disc in my back and basically had to spend the next couple of weeks bedridden until I had a spinal fusion. I'm 3 weeks post-surgery today. So I'm still looking to get back on the field, even though I am 37. But the flip side of that is I'm not going to be able to bowl again.
Yep.
But I'm going to come back and try and play as a bat.
As a bat. Yeah, very interesting. That's as you get older, those sort of things happen, I think. So
speaking from experience.
I'm glad you're still looking to get into it. But touching on that, so when, and obviously when we talk about injuries and sporting and things like that, and I've always, you know, I come from a sporting background, our kids are into sport, and I've got a lot of friends that have played very, very high level, Olympians, things like that. What I'm amazed at with professional sports people especially is, yes, they get paid quite well, and, you know, thoroughly deserve the amount of work and the effort they put in. Their career is so short. You know, we just talk about you now having an injury. That career can be short. It could happen earlier than 37. It can happen so much quicker. And a sporting career can be so short, but yet they don't make the most of it and they don't invest or they don't get a proper education or, you know, set themselves up in the future. I think it's a huge opportunity for sports people to set themselves up post that sporting career, like you've done a bit now, obviously, with your development side of things.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, you know, when I first started, 2006 was my first year as a rookie contract. And as part of that year, Queensland cricket and Australian cricket had a policy that you must earn or learn. And at that point in time, there was no 2020 cricket. It was just the long format or the one day. So you had a lot more time on your hands to either study or go and get a job. And I think that's where it stemmed from. You know, it was stress from us from a really early period that your maximum earning capacity as a professional athlete is very, very early in your career, you know, the ages of 20 to 30, if you're lucky to play 10 years, whereas if for the average professional, it's around that 45 to 55 mark. So you really got to make hay while the sun shines and set yourself up for post-career.
Do they still do anything like that now with the cricket, the pay or play type of thing to make sure you earn it and get a career?
To an extent, yeah, particularly with the young guys, you know, some of our guys that are coming into the squad for the coming season, you know, they've just finished school last year. So they're either, you know, trying to study part-time or whatnot. So they're always looking to upskill.
Did you have a mentor when you first actually, you know, considered property or even, you know, without a mentor, what was the motivation to get into property? Because, you know, there's so many other pathways, I guess, that you could have chosen, but property was the pathway that you did choose.
I suppose a lot of it probably stemmed from my parents, both of them extremely, extremely hard workers. Dad had a huge background in finance and then moved into, you know, working with one of the developers down the coast as well. So my love of property and wanting to invest and develop and all that sort of thing probably stemmed from all the injuries that I had, where early in my career, I probably missed more games from injury than what I played.
Yep.
And as part of rehab, it was always walking, you know, an hour or two every morning and every afternoon, or jumping on the bike. And I was, you know, traveling through all these suburbs, looking at and admiring at all the houses, and started to think, you know, how do I get myself one of them? Okay, what are the stepping stones to get there? And how do I maximize my cricketing earning potential so that I have one of those when I finish playing?
It's really interesting. So you said that it started from your parents, and it's a story that I hear often. You know, it's instilled in us. I know that's the journey for both Scott and myself as well. Parents who were property investors, parents who had an interest in property, parents that owned their own home as opposed to rented. So I guess that's inbred within us. However, you've also mentioned, you know, during recovery from injury, you spend a lot of time, you know, exploring suburbs, identifying, you know, different landmarks within the locations that you were either walking or cycling. What was the first acquisition? Was it a home, or was it an investment or a development? Where did it all start?
It was a home for me. I bought an apartment, one bedroom plus study in Portside Wharf. At that point in time, there was only three or four buildings in Portside Wharf, right. Very different to what it is today. Great for lifestyle. Terrible investment. So I lived there for 2 years. Yeah, and then moved into a house over in Hawthorne, where I still am now. But the funny thing about that apartment was I held it for a number of years after that and basically sold it 5 years after I bought it for the purchase price plus the stamp duty.
Right.
And I checked on it again the other day through CoreLogic, and it's still worth the exact same price that I sold it for.
It's interesting. And when you purchased that first unit, did you have any professional assistance, or who did you lean on for advice at that time, or was it no one and you felt that, you know, that was the right property for you at that time?
I suppose at that point in time, I wasn't looking at it as an investment. It was an ideal location for me because it was close to the city. Mm-hmm. I had views of the river and the city at that point in time, close to the airport where I was traveling every week. You know, and it's very easy to get around to Queensland Cricket, which was just down the road.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's amazing what those lifestyle investments are like. I know I can put my hand up and say we did the same thing. We had a unit at once as a lifestyle. It was a good lifestyle investment.
Yep.
I wouldn't say it was a great financial investment. So
it's good to learn from your own mistakes. So I think that we're all guilty of that.
Yeah, understanding what you're buying and why you're buying it is pretty important. So any sort of advice that you were given that you might be able to share with some others, like is there anyone that have you, no, I won't say anyone, but is there anything you can share, like the worst advice apart from a lifestyle investment that you might sort of think of?
One of the things that sticks out for me, and quite a few of the boys in the squad were there at the time and they still remind me of it, was a number of years ago, the Players Association had a property advisor come through and speak to all the players about investing their money. But at the end of the seminar, he basically wanted us to invest our money through him in Greenfield new home sites, west of Brisbane.
Mm.
And I sort of put up my hand and said, I don't think that's a great idea from a capital growth perspective. You might get a good yield, but that's not going to set you up for post-cricket.
Yeah,
didn't go down very well with the presenter.
It's really interesting that you've just said that, because we know and we talk a lot about the lack of legislative process or the lack of accountability, I guess, in the property investment space. It's not something that's regulated here in Australia. So, you know, when you've got professional peak sporting bodies bringing in effectively property spruikers who are there to sell development stock, and they package it up quite effectively as a great investment opportunity. But everybody in that room is getting the same investment opportunity. Nothing's tailored based on the individual circumstances. Nothing's tailored based on, you know, individuals' earning capacity or risk appetite. And I find it quite alarming that, you know, these sort of property spruikers, you know, have access to our elite sporting professionals for that sort of advice, because everybody needs tailored investment advice, not sort of a one size fits all. And good on you for standing up and telling them that that's perhaps not such a good investment. I hope that others in the room took your sort of stand up as a bit of an alarming sort of, okay, let's back out and get some further information before we jump in and put all of our eggs in one basket.
They might have also listened and not brought the guy back to talk to them again.
Yeah.
I don't know. But what about, okay, what about some best advice? Is there something that, whether it's from your parents or someone that you've worked with, is there something that's really stuck in your mind that probably has helped you along the path to what you do now?
I suppose from a sporting background, we're all about preparation. You know, the quote, the sharpest knives make the cleanest cuts, is always something that I've sort of hung my hat on. And that's all about the preparation, knowing exactly what you've got to do and where you've got to go to achieve that. So that's probably the biggest one for me. But from a sporting background, there's always, you know, an element of ego, motivation, and aspiration. Whether you're developing or investing or in business, I think the most important thing is managing those three together and not trying to get too far ahead of yourself.
Yep. Yeah, great advice. I mean, a lot of people go into property wanting to, you know, be a property developer, but they don't even own assets at this point in time. It's so important to assess that risk appetite and align that with what you're actually trying to achieve. And from what you've said, so maybe the first investment or the first property that you purchased, I call any property acquisition an investment, because even a home, you know, enables us to move up the property ladder effectively. So it might not have been the best investment, but it served a lifestyle purpose at that point in time. You then upgraded into another home, and I'm assuming from there you could leverage on the equity position at a portfolio level to now to then move into other investments and developments. And I think that's actually, you know, something that a lot of people fail to recognize. There's stepping stones that need to be taken, as opposed to jumping in and doing the big project up front, or, you know, buying the grand home up front. A lot of people need to make compromises along the way so that you can actually achieve, you know, stepping stone goals to be able to build out the portfolio.
I agree with what you're talking about, Ben, when you talk about preparation and being organized and things like that. So I don't know your whole portfolio at all, but I do know that, I mean, we went and had a look at a property you developed, I think it was in Cannon Hill.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, a few years ago, a house that you built there. You know, obviously buying property, land banking, being organized, you know, instead of jumping in and saying, well, I want to be a developer and I'm just going to go and do this straight away, you do have to crawl before you walk, and also being organized. So whether it's buying properties to land bank so that you know in the future you might develop them, or you might sell them to a developer, or whatever your exit strategy could be. Obviously from that Cannon Hill one, you've obviously then looked ahead to do other projects. And I think you've recently completed in your business a project at Burleigh Heads, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a fantastic joint venture with a good mate of mine, Kadir Muratoglu, and his wife Alicia from K2 Projects. Yep. So we picked up a site. I'd done a lot of research throughout the back end of COVID looking for sites to do a project together. And we just couldn't make anything stack up in Brisbane at that point in time, particularly as the construction cost was rising week on week. So I changed my tact and looked further down the Gold Coast, and that's where we picked up that site in Burleigh Heads. Neither of us had seen it, but we both worked hard on the numbers and the valuations, and it was a project that stacked up really, really well. Yeah. And pleasingly, you know, from 2 years from start to finish, is our end valuations and our sales prices were exactly where we had them pegged in the feasibility 2 years ago. Okay. The build cost moved somewhat, not anywhere near as much as what it was, but it was still a, you know, highly successful project.
And they're all sold?
They're all sold. We sold them to within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, perfect.
All their buyers seem pretty happy. That's a plus.
That's good.
Architecturally designed. I did watch a little bit, and I followed it on socials, seeing it get done. I saw you walk around the scaffold a few times and with the hard hat on and looking like you knew what you were doing as well. But
you've only got to look like you know what you're doing.
Who was in charge of selections and things like that?
Kadir and Alicia. Alicia was very much the interior designer on this whole project. And that's why it came up so well. You know, her expertise of interior design, some architectural stuff as well, and Kadir's expertise on the building and construction side of things, you know, was what helped put such a successful project together. But yeah.
And the buyers, were they investors or were they owner-occupiers?
All owner-occupiers. Wide range of you know, the demographic, of the age range, you know, right from, you know, early 20s up to late 60s. But That was sort of what we were going for when we were trying to put it all together. The biggest thing for us was, do we put lifts in versus no lifts?
Yeah.
And at that point in time, it was a 6-month wait on the lifts because they had to come from overseas. So we made the call early, even though, you know, sales agents or valuations said otherwise.
Mm.
But in the end of the day, we thought if we're going to be stuck with them, if the market tanked, we'd rather have them fully specced up with lifts than not. And it worked out in our benefit.
So you did put them in?
We did put them in, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, that's really good. And just for the listeners' benefit, what sort of product was it? They were townhouses, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, so we had 4 four-story villas, so 3 stories plus roof decks, basically almost on the creek at Talabudra Creek. So there's nothing built in behind us. So the last two villas basically had uninterrupted views from Burley Headland all the way up to Tally Creek and Tally Valley, which is beautiful.
Any more opportunities down that way?
There are some, but it's very difficult to get anything out of the ground at the moment, as you've probably seen
hunting
for property yourself. The build cost at the moment has probably stagnated somewhat, but it's the labour cost that is continuing to go up, and that's pushing feasibilities and making it difficult.
So the next project, and we were talking before we hit record about, you know, what's next for you. Can you just help listeners understand, you know, where you've redirected your attention now in terms of the next project?
Well, it's so difficult to make multi-res stack up at the moment unless you've had the site for a long period of time.
Yep.
So my property journey was the apartment at Portside first, the house in Hawthorne after that, and then I jumped in and tried to buy the largest block of land my budget would allow within 5 kilometres of the city. And that's where I picked up, about 840 square metres in Morningside. Progressed towards getting a DA for that. And I was actually looking to get started on the construction as COVID hit. But I think as we spoke off air, the tenancy regulations came in, which meant the tenants, if they didn't want to leave, there was no change to that.
Yep.
So I basically missed that whole window to build the approved townhouses as the build costs soared through the roof.
Mm.
So I had to pivot now, and I've done a 1-2 subdivision and looking to build some roomy accommodation the second half of this year.
What's your involvement in it, Ben? Do you handle the DA side of it? Do you manage that? Do you outsource it? Do you run the whole thing yourself?
Pretty much myself at the moment. I've got a great team of consultants around me, and if there's something I don't know, I've got no hesitation in asking someone for help. Someone like Kadir that I can lean on.
Yep.
I've got a couple of other mentors as well that provide great words of wisdom.
That's good. Like we talked earlier, having the team around you and the right people to help you with that, just it makes life easy, and having the right town planners, all that sort of advice. I think that's very, very important if people are looking to do this type of thing as well.
In terms of your consultant team, Ben, who are your number one key players? I mean, you talked about mentors, other consultants. Who would you say are the people you're on the phone to most to get that advice from?
I suppose one of my great mentors outside of my parents is Brett Gillen. So he was the UDIA president for a number of years and also development manager at some of the really big companies. Some have done some of the largest projects on Brisbane skyline. So I joined the UDIA probably almost 10 or 12 years ago now to do their development mentorship program.
Yep.
And I was lucky enough to get paired up with him at the time.
Perfect.
His son went to the same school as I did. He went to the same school as I did. And we got on really, really well. And, to this day, we still try and catch up as often as our schedules allow.
That's fantastic. And I think that's, having someone to learn the skills from rather than trying to test the waters and making errors along the way, it can be far more cost effective. I think going into developments, having the knowledge of experts on your side will save you thousands in the long run, because it's going to fast track things. It's going to avoid those mistakes, as you probably know. But also I think it allows you to make decisions that are much lower risk decisions. And you've really pointed out a strategy where you've pivoted just recently on a site where you originally were planning to build townhouses, but because that changed and, over time construction costs escalated and it no longer became feasible, rather than just sitting and holding, you pivoted. And I think that's really clever, because now you've found a solution that works from a cash flow perspective, especially once they're built. You'll have a really strong cash flow, I imagine, with a rooming accommodation sort of style of housing.
And that's probably where, what pushed me that way, because I am coming to the back end of my career. I don't have the high income that I had for, early days when I could, hold these negatively geared properties. So it was, how do I flip that now, maintain the asset, but turn the cash flow around. And then the benefit of that is it can also help with cash flow leading into the next project as well.
I love that you've just touched on that, because every time we work with a property investor, we're always talking about the phases of building out a portfolio, and it's so relative to the income that they're earning at a particular point in time throughout their own career. So what you've just pointed out there is because your income from your income source, in your case, professional cricket, because that's changing over time and reducing, you need to now start to consolidate and focus more on cash flow within the portfolio, and being able to pivot and adapt to that changing environment is what is so important when it comes to successful property investing. And it's the same for any investor on their investment journey. So many people come to us and they're wanting cash flow first up, and yet they may be on the highest taxable income bracket, and it makes no sense that they would compromise on a strong growth asset when they're, you know, already going to be paying such high levels of tax. So I think that is a crucial point and something that's so important to take from this episode. Focus the strategy at the right time based on individual circumstances, because it's exactly what you've done and it's working successfully for you. So congrats.
What's been your best decision you think you've made to date with the property investing side of things?
The best decision, it's a tough one that. I think it probably comes back to spending my time wisely.
Yep.
You know, I was a young fella at one point in time, had a lot of spare time. I'd sit on the PlayStation for 6 hours a day after training. And then I realized that if I wanted to take this next step in property investment and set myself up after cricket, I needed to be better with my time. Yep. So that's where I got my full nerd on, I like to call it. I was never great at school, but all the times that I would spend in hotel rooms, traveling around the world, whether it was IPL or Pakistan, more recently, hotel quarantines, it was, reading, doing as much reading as I could, to the point where I would go back through the old RBA monthly papers that they would release, read through all the housing stats, and then try and reverse engineer their stats to match the suburbs that I'm looking at.
So post-school, Ben, did you go from school to uni or college or anything like that? Or was it just sport, I'm going to play cricket and focus on cricket and then turn that nerdy part on and learn a bit more and educate yourself?
It was probably, there was a box tick in between. Yep. I went to Griffith University for 2.5 years while my rookie contract started up with cricket and studied Bachelor of Business, which was first called Leisure Management, which I thought was fitting. I did 2.5 years of that, had 6 months to go and binned it off. I didn't go back to that. It became a property focus instead.
Yeah, it's interesting how you can make that change and you know, focus on something and be driven, because obviously sports people are driven to achieve and to have those things. We've got our youngest son who just says to us at the moment, his life is water polo and he's just obsessed with it. And that he said, I don't want to go to uni. I just want to play water polo. I'm like, yeah, you have to do something. You can't live off a sport like that. So maybe he'll listen to this episode and go, oh, okay, I want to just go and do, what did you say it was, life?
Well, it was called Leisure Management. That was a degree at Griffith University for a few years there.
He'll be Googling that, I think, now.
Find out more about it. Absolutely. And look, I think, Ben, from your perspective, you say a lot of the knowledge that you've gained has come from self-motivation in learning and educating yourself, committing time away from the PlayStation and into, reading, I mean, RBA minutes and things, that's a big commitment to make. But ultimately, it's actually about a desire. It's a desire that comes from a mindset, and it's a mindset that potentially comes from elite sport. Once you're fixed on something, you'll do anything to improve your ability to achieve that goal. And I think that's a classic example of, what you've done here. You've decided that property is something that you'd like to focus on. You realized you were lacking some skills in the same way with cricket. If you lack the skills, you train, you get better. But you did the same with property. You saw the gap. You actually sought out mentors to assist with the learning and obviously self-educated so that you developed the skills to be able to go ahead and succeed. And I think that's incredible and you should be applauded for that. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. It's I must say it is far easier now to be able to get access to the information to self-learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of logging onto the RBA website and looking at their housing papers, you've got the podcast like you guys do. There's so much information out there. plenty of bad information as well. So you need enough knowledge to sift through that.
Yeah.
You know, but gone are the days of, you know, I remember reading through the API magazine and the airports in 2009. You don't need to do that anymore. It's all online.
Yeah. That's very true. It's a good point. And actually, you've raised another valid point there. There's a lot of information out there, but unfortunately, there's also a lot of misinformation out there. And I think for the uneducated consumer, it's very easy to still be misled because there is a volume of information that still is very misleading, especially in the property investing space. And, you know, we're very motivated as individuals ourselves, but also as business owners and as property investment professionals of Australia members, that's PIPA, to ensure that people seeking out qualified advice are working with a qualified property investment advisor if it's investment properties that they're interested in, because there's so many people out there spruiking the wrong types of investments that are not right for the individual's risk appetite or tax position. And it's so important to make that individualized for every individual. And you've done that in a way because you've had a team around you that's been guiding you and ensuring that you're making the right decisions based on your circumstances. Unfortunately, for a lot of people, they don't have that team around them unless they seek out a professional that can create that team for them. So it's really valid points that you've raised.
Do you see many post teammates interested to follow you or want to jump on the bandwagon with you to the property side of things, or do you just let them do their own?
There's quite a few guys that are interested, certainly intrigued by it all. I know one of the good mates of mine is still playing, is studying property development at Bond down the coast. But again, I think we spoke off air, it's one thing to, you know, to study it and be interested in it. It's another thing to actually go down the path of, you know, self-teaching yourself, knowing what to look for and what not to look for. And also, the more you know, the less of the fear of the unknown. Yeah, so you actually feel more comfortable jumping in because you have some semblance of knowledge.
Yeah.
Even if you're still using, you know, someone around you for that knowledge to direct you in the right direction, you are well aware whether they're sending you down the wrong one or not.
Yeah, it's very true.
I think those connections with sport and business can be very valuable. Because you could lean on that sporting connections and the people that are involved in that, if you're smart with it, to be able to actually benefit from having those connections and people that everyone knows. And people, if you don't ask, you'll never receive.
Mm.
So we always say to people, like, just ask, talk to someone. If you talk about mentors, just ask people the question, because you'll be surprised. Most people will actually probably help out and happy to help out as well.
100%. There's always a right way to ask as well.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Kasswich, when I first started, he was still at the back end of his career, but he was someone that worked the room really, really well. Every luncheon was a networking. And he's, you know, he's set himself up for life because of that, with, you know, various business ventures and how he approaches and get on with people.
Yeah.
So really what you've shared with us today is that post-cricket, for you, it's likely you're not having to go into a 9-to-5 job. The business that you've set up has been created off the back of knowledge in property, building out developments, you know, selling those sites, potentially exploring other opportunities in property. And that's actually probably quite different to many of your teammates who may actually have to go back to the grind of 9-to-5. Would you agree?
Exactly. And I think, you know, an easy avenue for any professional sportsman is to go straight into coaching or commentating because that's not something you really need to prepare for while you're playing. But I've sort of tried to go down, you know, two sets of tunnel visions where at times I probably spend too much time on property and not enough on cricket and vice versa. But there's always a time and a place for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, good point. So what's next in terms of, let's start with cricket.
Yep. So spinal fusion, I'm 3 weeks post. I'm not sure when I'm going to play again yet. I'm not allowed to bowl again, unfortunately, but I am going to come back and play as a bat, which, you know, to be fair, I've been doing predominantly the last couple of years anyway.
Yep.
As for the time frame, I'm hoping, you know, ideally July or August at the latest. Recovery is going well, rehab's going well. So jumped on the bike for the first time yesterday, which was a win.
Yeah.
Good.
Pulled up a little bit sore today, but that's okay.
In Australia? So you'll play in Australia or overseas?
Yeah, it'll be back overseas for me. So this all started last year. I had a back complaint. I've always had disc problems with my back for about 17 years.
Yep.
But in August last year, I ruptured a disc when I was batting in a tournament in Canada. Basically lost most of my feeling in my right leg and what have they called drop foot.
Yeah.
So I'd walk along and my Birkenstock would keep falling off.
Oh, yeah.
So I had surgery for that, got that fixed. I pushed it really, really hard to try and get back in time for some sort of the summer cricket here, whether it was the Big Bash or anything else,
yep.
But just missed that window and ended up playing, going back overseas and whether or not I got too carried away for the age that I am, taking the new ball in Bangladesh, and I've destroyed that disc again, unfortunately.
Is that encouraging because the wife's overseas, or because she, I think she travels a bit with work?
She does, yeah. So she does a lot of the broadcasts for all the same tournaments that I do. Yep. Does the Big Bash for Channel 7, has done for a number of years. Every year she does a lot of the T10 leagues as well, which pop up. She's in Pakistan at the moment, so she's avoided all of my rehab and stuck on the couch. Well played. And then she's off to India for the first 2 weeks of the IPL next week too.
So you guys get to catch up a bit when you tour.
We do, but we have long periods of time where we can be together and long periods of time we're apart, but we both know it's not sustainable either. It's not going to be forever. So,
What about property?
Yeah, property. So obviously with that future, when we talk about that future and you talk about the not sustainable, obviously you're setting yourself up for future. So as Melinda said, what does the property journey look like?
I think for me, it's trying to get these Morningside houses out of the ground first. Yep. But with property development, it can be a long time between drinks. It can be 2 or 3 years between payments. So there's still going to be some semblance of, filling in my time, setting up the next project or working, another industry, still real estate, but whichever way we go. The most recent one for me that is intriguing me, obviously with residential property investment, you can reach a ceiling where serviceability kills you as your income drops off. So it's trying to pivot and try and work out, do I go and pick up a commercial property with a passive income? Mm. Is that going to help alongside with the Morningside property? Mm. All things I need to weigh up.
Yeah.
And there's so much to consider because there's so much opportunity. And I think that's what you're talking to there. There is so much opportunity in property. It's about identifying what opportunity is right for you at this particular point in time. And we are in a very changing environment. You know, if we were having this conversation 4 years ago in COVID, interest rates dropped to the lowest they've ever been. Money was practically free. And it was at a time where, there was a lot of uncertainty in the market. Then we had that huge boom where in Brisbane, property prices since post-COVID, they're up more than 50%. So, if you had the ability to acquire sites post-COVID, you'd be sitting on, some gold right now ready to, put some money into manufacturing additional equity. But of course now site feasibility is really tricky. It's hard to actually find sites that stack up in terms of finding a development margin. So I think that all of those things combined have to go into, that conversation of what is next, because we are in an ever-changing environment. Interest rates are higher and all of those things need to be considered.
And there's some good opportunities in Brisbane too with, with everything happening and Olympics and all those sort of things around the corner. I look at the combination that you've had with sport and your career and how you've changed into the business side of it with developments. I would probably class it as successful. So look, well done. I do look at not all these sporting people, but I look at sporting people and I think they do waste some of their money by not being smart and thinking post career. Is there any sort of advice you could give to some young sporting players, that looking at some professional, what they should do or any sort of advice you might be able to give?
I think probably the most important thing, and it was delivered to me when I first started, and that is your career, whether it's 5 years or 15 years, is gone in the blink of an eye. And when you're a young fella, you're straight out of school, the bright lights are out there, you're out on the field every night, you're not thinking about anything else.
That's true.
You think it's going to last forever.
Yep.
But it doesn't. 2 months ago, I was on the field, packed house in Sylhet in Bangladesh, taking the new ball and taking wickets. Thought, this is great. I'm going to keep doing this until I'm 40. And the very next day, I'm out for 6-12 months. So you just never know.
So setting yourself up for the future is something you need to consider. I think that's some good advice for our youngest. Might actually get him to listen to this podcast.
He won't agree with it. But anyway, we'll try. Oh, mate, look, that's been a really good chat. I hope our listeners have had some entertainment and some education to hear about your journey through the Brisbane boy, through school to, self-educating, being so successful at cricket and also your business endeavours. So congratulations and, mate, keep it up and obviously keep in touch with us when we're out and about on weekends and we run into each other as well.
No, thanks very much. It's been fantastic to come in and obviously meet you both again properly. We saw, fleeting moment at that auction at Ascot. But thank you very much for getting me in.
Excellent. Well, that's it from us. Thanks again to Ben for sharing his time and his knowledge and information with everyone. As usual, I'll let Melinda wrap it up. It's been great chatting. We'll talk soon and bye for now.
Yes, it's been an absolute privilege for us to have Ben Cutting in the recording studio today. So thank you again from me for your time and also for sharing your story. I think there's a lot of people out there that will really value the information that you've shared, knowing that there is opportunity for anyone in the market. It's just about self-education and finding where that opportunity sits. As always, we hope you have enjoyed today's episode. If you have, we would love for you to leave us a review. And also don't forget to share the episode with friends and family. If you know any mad cricket fans, let them know that we've had Ben Cutting on the Brisbane Property Podcast. You can hear his journey, his story through property and also cricket. We look forward to speaking with you again next week. Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in today. Please remember everything we have spoken about on this podcast is general in nature, and we always recommend that you obtain independent advice in relation to your specific circumstances. If you liked today's episode, don't forget to subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes. And of course, tell your friends about us. If you would like to get in contact, please visit www.brisbanepropertypodcast.com.au or email us at info@brisbanepropertypodcast.com.au. Feel free to send in any questions and we will try to answer them in future episodes.